Good morning. How are you guys doing today? You guys awake?
Yes.
Now, typically when I get scheduled to do a breakout, they either schedule me at the end of the day when everyone's really tired or at the beginning of the day when everyone's really tired. So today we're going to be talking about recruiting and approving volunteer leaders, you know, and that's such a riveting topic. I'm going to do my best, right, get excited, you know, maybe jump up and down, make sure you get your coffee in you. I also brought some Monster energy drinks. If anyone's really tired and they need to wake up a little bit, because I need you alert during this talk. Does anyone want one of these? Anyone want? Well, come on and get one. You know, I'll leave them up here. You can grab them. Because I want you guys awake, because we're going to be talking about some really important things today. Feel free to grab one. My name is Bob Hempen, and I'm on staff up at our Bronzebridge campus. That's about 30 miles north of here, and I've been on staff at North Point in Bronzebridge for about 10 years, working with small group leaders and helping them create cool small group environments in their homes. Okay? Now, before we jump into the topic at hand, I just want to remind you of our group model, because that may answer some questions that you have and inform you in how and why we do what we do. We have a closed group model. Our groups consist of 6 to 8 individuals or 5 or 6 couples that meet in homes all around the metro area. Our groups, we have short-term groups that last anywhere from 6 to 10 weeks, and then we have long-term groups that we call community groups that last 1 to 2 years. Okay, so that's how we do small groups. And one of the things we learned right from the beginning of creating our small group model was that probably the most important aspect to the success of a small group was the strength of the small group leader. That seems to make sense. I'm sure you guys are, that resonates with you. But it's something that we are reminded of over and over again on a weekly basis and at all of our campuses, probably on a daily basis. And again, it's just this idea that probably the most important aspect to the success of a small group or a small group model, a small group ministry, is the strength of a small group leader. Now, this is especially true for our groups, okay? Because our groups meet in homes. They're on their own. A lot of our groups may last 1 to 2 years. So our leaders have a lot of influence. They have a lot of autonomy in the lives of the people in their group and what they're doing. So it's really important that we have a clear, consistent, and thorough interview and application process that all of our leaders go through. Because that allows us to do a couple different things. The first thing it allows us to do is to find the right type of leaders. Then it allows us to set clear expectations to all of our leaders. And the last thing that it does is it really helps us to jumpstart the relationship that we have with our leaders as they start small groups. Because some of these leaders we're gonna work with them for 1 to 2 years or even more. So it's just really important that we do this. Also, at the end of the day, we're talking about people's lives. Because I believe, and I know you believe, God uses these groups and these group leaders to minister to people in the groups. You know, we know God uses that. They come together, they're learning, they're growing, they're serving together. There's a lot of cool things that happen in our small groups. Every once in a while, we hear a tough story where an individual in the group or a couple in the group go through a tough time, like the loss of a job or some relational issues. And those are tough stories, but we hear group leaders getting the group together, and they serve these people, and they love on them. They get us involved. And what is a tough story or a tough situation turns into a good story, because the leader is able to step in. But every once in a while, we hear a different kind of story, and something happens in the group, you know, a loss of a job, a relational issue, or there's conflict in the group, and the leader doesn't step in, and he doesn't get the people involved, he doesn't get us involved, or maybe they're even the cause of the problems. And when that happens, there's a lot of hard feelings, there's a lot of problems that we have to manage on the back end. So having a good system in place will help you maximize the good stories and minimize the bad stories, okay? It's just really important to do. So if you look in your books, we're on page 47, I believe. And we're going to be talking about 3 different things today. We're going to be talking about the profile, who we're looking for in a small group leader. Then we're going to take a few minutes and talk about surfacing leaders, how we find small group leaders. And then we're going to end by talking about our vetting process, and I'm going to walk you through how we interview leaders for our small groups. And then at the end of that time, we're going to have some time for Q&A, so that'll give you plenty of time to ask questions. Now, one last qualifier before we jump in. I just think this is really important, especially if you're just starting out and building a group's ministry in your church. I think it's really important for all of us to take time and get a clear understanding in our head about our church mission and strategy and how small groups, your small groups, fit into that. You know, you got to just get a clear picture in your head. What is our church about and how do groups fit into that? And then you need to be able to communicate those ideas to your leaders, to your church members, to your, you know, the staff, everyone. So what that means is you need to come up with a number of stories and word pictures and metaphors and the words that you want to use to capture how and why you do what you do. And you want to tell those stories over and over and over again. And you want people to sort of catch on to that. And you want to create a language around that. Because once you start to do that, you will help create a culture around your group environments and how and why you do groups that will help you with everything that we're going to talk about this morning. So that's just a little side note. I just encourage you guys, if you haven't done that, to work on those things. Now, if you look in your outline, we're going to talk about who we're looking for as a small group leaders. And when we're vetting out leaders, there's a couple filters we use. There's a couple tools that we use to help us figure out who is a good small group leader for our groups. The first is this idea of establishing the filter of the four C's. Now, this is a very easy tool to use. And basically, these are just four different aspects that we look for in small group leaders. But you can contextualize this and customize this to whatever kind of model you have. I'm just going to explain to you how we view the four C's, how we kind of use the four C's. I'm going to go through these. The first C is character. Is the leader candidate a believer in Jesus Christ, and does the leader candidate's lifestyle line up with the Christian ethic? Okay, so like if this person were to walk into my office and want to lead a small group, I might have a problem. You know, this was taken a few years ago. This is Randy Travis, and Randy Travis, like two summers ago, was arrested. They found him passed out butt naked in the middle of the road. When they woke him up, he got in a fight with the police. So, you know, if this guy were to walk into my office, I might have some issues with his character. Now, we laugh at that, and obviously that's a joke, but the truth is we can't take for granted that the people that are coming into our church or into our offices looking to lead a group are believers in Jesus Christ, and we can't assume they have the same understanding of Christian leadership, of morality, of what we expect from them and for them as they lead our church, within our church. So we have to make sure there's some things in place to help us gauge the character of the people that are wanting to lead. The second C is competency. Does the leader candidate have the necessary skill set? Is the right in skill set to effectively lead a small group? So now if this person were to come into my office and want to lead a small group, again, my spidey senses might go off, and not just because she looks really angry, but because she's a teacher. And if you know anything about our small groups are not teacher-led. They're not didactic. It's not one person leading a group of people through a Bible study. The way I describe our small groups is they're sort of life groups. They do go through curriculum, but it's more of a facilitated discussion. Any number of people in the group might lead out on the discussion, and it's something that we want everyone involved with. So what we look for is people who are good facilitators. We like people that are great at networking, that know how to get people involved, that might have some level of admin skills to help sort of coordinate everything. But the way we do groups and why we do groups will inform the skill set that we're looking for. And your groups may be more teacher-oriented, and that might be something you need to look for. It just depends on what you're trying to do. The third C is culture. Does the leader candidate understand our church style? Okay? If this couple were to walk in, again, they look like a really nice couple. But I might be a little concerned because if you know anything about our churches, we're not very traditional in what we do. We're traditional in what we believe, but we're not very traditional in the things that we do. I always tell people, we're not a very churchy church. You know, even the way we talk about spirituality, we're not very churchy in how and why we talk about things. So I think it's really important to have people lead groups that are sort of in step with your church culture. Because in my mind, I think it's important that the experience that they have in Sunday morning is similar to what they have in their small group as far as how they talk about spiritual growth, how they talk about God and how he works in people's lives. If not, that can cause some confusion that you may have to come in and manage sometime down the road. The last C that we have is the idea of chemistry. Does the leader candidate have strong people skills and self-awareness? Okay, and lastly, if this guy were to walk into my office again, might have a little problem. Now, if you don't know, this guy is a character on TV. His name is Michael Scott. And the whole butt of the joke of this show is that he is the boss of this office, and he has no self-awareness whatsoever. And so, therefore, like, he's a horrible boss. So if you've ever seen the show, like, halfway, you know, a lot of the shows, you're just cringing because of the stupid things that he says. Now, I think we would all say, because small groups are relational, that we want people with good social skills, good relational skills. But one of the things that I would ask you to think about is I think it's also important to find people with a high level of self-awareness, because groups are relational. And they're a group of people with all sorts of different views and thoughts and expectations about small group. And so you need to have a leader that can adjust to the needs of the group. There's also times it's not uncommon for conflict or friction to happen within a group, between group members, or sometimes between a group member and the leader. And again, it's really important that the leader can adjust themselves to the situation. And people with a high level of self-awareness can just do that better. They can manage those relational situations a little better. Okay, so we think that's really important. Now, that's how we sort of look at the four C's. Again, these are very flexible to be able to use in whatever context you have, but that's how we interpret them. The next thing we're going to talk about, the next filter we use, is this idea of establishing margin. Does the leader candidate have enough time, energy, and overall stability to lead a group for the next 12 to 18 months? Now, when I think of group leadership, and I don't know what kind of groups you guys have at your church, but in our groups, you know, I'm thinking it's not a killer time crunch week to week. You know, maybe an hour to 2 hours max. I mean, they go through the lesson, they start thinking of great questions, icebreakers, maybe some fun social things during the week. You know, they're sending out texts or emails to their group members. But week to week, I don't believe that small groups, at least in our model, take a ton of time to manage. However, it is not uncommon, and actually could be very likely, that a group that meets together for a year to 2 years, something's going to happen in the group. Either there's going to be some conflict, there's going to be some tension within the group, or someone in the group, or a couple in the group, is going to experience a tough time. Loss of a job, relational issues, death in the family. And it's during those seasons that it's really important that leaders are able to step up and provide another level of help and leadership. So they need to have the time, they need to have the emotional energy, they need to have the resources to be able to do that if that were to happen. Okay, so it's really important for us to ask people, hey, knowing what you know today, you know, if something were to happen, do you think you have the time and energy to manage, to get the group involved, to get us involved? All right, so it's really important for us to figure that out along the way. So the four C's kind of helps us figure out who the right person is for leading. Then the idea of margin helps us determine if this is the right time for them to lead. And those are five easy checkpoints that you can use to determine leaders for your groups. And that has really helped us along the way. Letter C there, I'm going to hit that in a few minutes. It kind of belongs later on in the outline. The next thing we're going to do, now that we've kind of figured out the type of leader that we're looking for, we're going to talk about where we find leaders. Now, I believe that good leaders are a really rare commodity, and I'm sure you guys would agree with me. You know, they're hard to find in any area of life, whether it's, you know, church, business, whatever that is. Good leaders are hard to find, and we have not, like, invented the leader tree where we can just go to it all the time and get all the leaders we need. I mean, this is something we are constantly learning about. So, number one, I would say, if you guys have any great ideas at the end of the session, come tell me, because we're always looking for ideas with this. But there are two or three things that we have done that I think we've seen over the year has really helped us identify great leaders, okay? The first idea, if you look under A, is intentionally apprenticing. And the way I say it is intentional apprenticing. And this is a simple idea that we ask all of our leaders to do once they lead a small group. And it's basically, once they get to know the people in their group, would they start to look around and see if there's any future potential leaders within their group? Typically, the way this looks is after 2 or 3 months, they really get to know people in their groups, and they just look around. Hey, who's excited about group? Who seems to connect well with others? You know, who seems to get how and why we do groups? And if so, would you identify them, and would you approach them and ask them if they would be interested to work with you in leading the current group and becoming their apprentice? And if so, we ask our leaders to sort of take them under their wing and begin to teach them how to do this. Now, a lot of times I'll tell my leaders, if you have a good apprentice, you know, over time, you can just let them lead the group, and then the current leaders sort of become the training wheels for the group. And they really allow the apprentices to get some hands-on training, which is really valuable over time. Now, this is an easy idea, but it takes a bit of intentionality, meaning you're going to have to ask your leaders throughout the year, like, are you doing this? Are you identifying this? You'll also have to give them tools, simple tools to use and how they can train up their apprentices. So it could be, you know, they meet before group or after group. It could be, hey, this is training them, teaching them how to lead a group. At some point in time during the life of the group, we ask the leaders to introduce us to the apprentices so we can get to know them and put them through our process so when the group ends, the apprentices are ready to lead a new group. Again, simple idea, but it will take some intentionality on your part. But I tell you, our best leaders are former apprentices because they've been in our groups, they know how and why we do groups, and they've had a leader invest in them. And those are our best leaders overall. And we probably have about 20-25% of our overall leaders have been apprenticed. So it does give us a number of leaders over the long haul. The second thing that we do, we see under B, is we seek recommendations from our small group leaders. Now, underneath that or to the side, you can write envision. Envision is an event that we do at some of our campuses. And basically what we do is we ask our current leaders to think about the people that they know that go to our church, but who aren't invested anywhere. They're not serving anywhere, leading anywhere, but who they think would be good leaders. And we ask them to invite these people to an event and to attend with them to an event where we can cast vision about leadership. We can talk to them about how we support leaders and things that we do to help leaders. And then we give them information about where they can lead. Now, the thing that makes this work is that we have the right people, our leaders, who understand the four C's, who understand how and why we do groups, who we have vetted out. They are asking the right type of people. You know, people that they think can lead to come to an event with them. Okay, so it's a very targeted ask. You're really able to target your ask or your invitation to real potential leaders. And what we've seen at the campuses that have been doing this is it really does lift up some great leads that we can use in the future for future leadership. And again, the trick is having the right people ask the right type of people because they understand how and why you're doing groups and what you're looking for. They invite them to this event where we can cast some vision for them, and it has really helped us to identify some great leaders along the way. There's another thing that I think is oftentimes neglected, so much so that I didn't even put it in the outline, but you can write it in the notes if you like. But I was thinking about this as I was going through my talk. Creating professional systems to support your leaders will help you identify the right leaders, it will help you with leader retention, and it will give your current leaders the confidence to invite other people to lead. So when you're creating your systems as far as your application interview process, the tools that you give your leaders to lead, the training things that you do, how you develop your leaders, when you do that with a high level of excellence, your leaders are going to notice. And they're going to feel empowered, and they're going to feel supported in what they're doing. They're also not going to get worn out as quickly because you're supporting them well. And they're going to have the confidence to invite other people to an event like Envision because they know you take care of them. They know what you do really works. And so they have no problem referring other people to get involved. And so this is something, again, that doesn't get looked at a lot, but having professional systems with a high level of excellence in place and what you do will really help you find leaders, retain leaders, and encourage your leaders to get other people involved. It's just something that often gets missed that I think is really important. The last thing that we do is, just like anywhere else, we allow walk-ons, potential leaders that self-identify. There's a couple times a year where we do this event called Group Link. It's a big event that we get leaders and help people get into groups. And when we're promoting these, we always have people that self-identify and they want to lead, and that's always, you know, a natural way to do that. I'm sure that happens in your churches as well. But no matter how you come to us, whether you're an apprentice, whether you're a referral, like at an Envision event, or you have self-identified, all of our leaders need to be believers in Jesus Christ. They need to be members of one of their campuses, and they need to be willing to meet all the expectations that we set before them when we go through the interview process. So that's a given no matter how they get to us, okay? So now we're going to move into the actual vetting process, what we do as we choose our leaders. So the first thing is that the candidate completes the online application. We have an online application that they do. We ask for 3 references that they fill out. These go to a staff groups director who reviews the application, you know, checks the references, and we set up a time to interview the candidate. Now, interviews last anywhere from 60 to 90 minutes, and 3 things typically happen during an interview. The first thing is that the leader candidate shares their story, and we get to know them. The second thing is group director explains leader expectations. Underneath that, you see we present the development plan, and the director gives what we call the character talk. We answer any questions that they have, and on the following page, you say we move into a decision, a time of making deciding whether they're going to lead or not. Now, what I'm going to do is kind of color in how I interview people and kind of bring all this together. So when someone's interested, I get their application, I read through it, I check the references, I set up a time to meet with them. And for me, interviews usually take about an hour. And they will come in, I will introduce myself to them, and I'll explain to them what we're going to be doing over the next hour so they kind of know what they're getting into. Most of the time I'm interviewing these people, I don't know them. So it's my way of assuring them, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to talk about. And I always ask them to tell me their story. Now, the way I do stories is I say, hey, listen, I would love to hear what's been going on in your world for the last 3 to 5 years. You know, what's been going on relationally, socially, work-wise? You know, how did you get involved at Brownsbridge Church? You know, tell me about your spiritual journey. What's going on there? And then kind of bring it all together and explain to me kind of why we're here. Why do you want to lead a small group? Okay, and it's during that time when I just allow them, you know, just tell me with those qualifiers, tell me about yourself, that I put on the lens of the 4 C's and the margin, and I start to listen to what they're saying, okay? But not just what they're saying, but how they're saying what they're saying. What are the words they're using? What do they get excited about? You know, I want to hear about their spiritual journey. What are the things that sort of, you know, you can tell they get really excited about? If it's a couple, I get to hear, like, how do they connect together? Do they seem to work together, or is one totally checked out, one's really excited, or do they step all over each other? The truth is, I try to figure out, are they compelling in how they tell their story, or am I totally bored? You know, is this like 5 minutes in, I'm about to snooze? So all of this I go through. Do they understand how and why we do groups? This is the time to use the filters to see if this person is what we're looking for as a small group leader. Have they been involved before? Do they kind of know how and why we do what we do? At the end of that, I'm able to ask questions. If something comes up that I'm a little concerned about, I can ask questions about it. I can get more information at the end of that time. Okay? So once we get through that, and that can take anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes, maybe a little more depending on the person, we move into a time of setting expectations. Now, as a side note, I think it's really important that we set clear expectations. And if you set clear expectations at the beginning of this process, you will be better enabled to manage issues, problems, or concerns that come up down the road if they do come up, okay? Setting clear expectations at the beginning of this process will better enable you to deal with issues, problems, or concerns that come up down the road if they come up. Okay? Because if you set clear expectations and they get broken down the road, you can always point back to this conversation and say, hey, we talked about this. Now, those are always really weird and awkward. They're always tough, but you can always go back to this conversation and say, hey, I presented these expectations to you. They're really clear. You accept them. What happened? It's really hard to hold people accountable to unclear expectations. And again, we can't expect they have the same understanding we have about leadership, about how to run their group, about morality, unless we talk about it clearly to them to make sure we're on the same page, okay? So it's just really important to do. Also, you're role modeling for them how to set expectations for their groups. okay? On your seat, when you see that, we have this group agreement that once groups get together, this is sort of an agreement that they do and how they're going to do group for the long term. This is a way that they kind of set expectations. And leaders need to do that well. They need to be able to talk about this in a way that's not overly pushy, but is also clear. And I know this is kind of tough to do. In some personalities, it's harder to do than others, especially when you're talking about volunteers, like it's tough to set expectations. But you're really trying to guard your church and your church members from leaders that may or may not be appropriate to lead. So the first thing is the director explains the development plan. And the way I call this, these are just practical expectations. This is sort of the to-do list. You know, these are all the things that you want them to do. For us, it's real simple. We ask that our leaders meet with us twice a year. We have some online tools that we want them to use. There's a couple events that we might have that we want them to participate in. There's certain things that we want to happen in every group that we just encourage them to do along the way. But again, the clearer I am and the more that I stress the importance of doing this will help them to get involved. Because if I'm not clear, if I don't stress the importance of this, they may or may not get involved in things that we want them to get involved with, okay? Usually very simple because it's just the to-do list. The second thing is we give the character talk, and that's when it gets a little more tricky. We're going to hand this out at the end, but this is an adult ministry agreement. And this is something that we use in all of our environments. We have one for our kids' environments, but this is the one that we use for our adults' environments. And this is just for people who are wanting to lead. They're asking us to be in leadership. And this is what I call a conversation starter. And again, we'll have this for you when you walk out. But there's three areas that we cover on this. The first is in regarding sexual behavior. The second thing that we talk about is alcohol and substance use. And then the third thing that we talk about is social media. Okay, so it allows us to begin a conversation with these individuals about what we expect with them. Now, I really interviewed someone about a month ago. We had our group links in August. So actually in early September, I interviewed a couple who had been involved in a lot of churches. They had done small groups. And then when I was walking through this with them, they told me, they're like, no one's ever asked us these questions. Like, this is pretty cool, but no one's ever asked us these questions. I'm thinking to myself, like, wow. I want to make sure that our leaders kind of understand that. So the way that I do that, and when I get into this conversation, I tell them, I say, listen, I'm going to take 10 or 15 minutes and set some expectations for you, some personal expectations, and I'm not expecting you to say anything. You don't have to answer me. You don't have to affirm anything. You don't have to say anything right now. If you have any questions, you can ask me, and we want to make sure we're clear. And then I want you to take 24 to 48 hours and think about everything I've said and make sure this is the right time to lead and that you feel comfortable with all the expectations that I'm setting before you. Okay, I really want them to think about it. And the reason why I give them that out is because at that point, they don't know me. And we're talking about sexual morality. We're talking about some things. And I don't want to put anyone in a position where they have to answer questions that they're not ready to answer. You know, I just want to make it safe for them. But if they do want to lead, what I say is if we talk tomorrow and we both feel like this is a good fit, you're affirming what we're saying. You're agreeing to these expectations. And once you lead, now we're in partnership. Now it's a different ball game, and now there is a level of accountability that may come into play, okay? But I want to give them time to think about it. Even if they're comfortable with everything we're saying, I still want them to think about it and pray about it because they've never heard this before, okay? And I've had couples or individuals come to me later, and I just think for margin reasons, a lot of times they've said, you know, I don't think this is the right time. We thought about it, and, you know, we're going to wait. So it's always good to give people a chance to really think it through. So once we do that, we answer any questions that they have, and then we go into making the decision. Dun, dun, dun. Leader candidates, when they're approved, that's obviously very easy. I would encourage you, though, to take a moment and celebrate it a little bit. There's always opportunity to cast vision, to thank people for what they're doing. You can write them a note. You can give them a gift card. You can do whatever to celebrate what they're doing because they're leading for you. You know, they're going to be helping you do what you're trying to do. So take a moment and really celebrate them in that. The tough thing is when we have to say no to someone in leadership. Now, that might be different for you in your church. You know, that might not be something you do a lot. In our world, because of the way we do groups, our leaders have a lot of autonomy and influence, and we have to protect the people coming in to wanting to get into groups. So we have to be able to say no to people that aren't ready or aren't on the same page with us. And there's just a couple ideas that I would give you if this happens. And I've had to do this a number of times. It's never an easy process. The first thing is the interviewer needs to provide clear reasons for the denial. Now, they're going to be wounded no matter what, but you don't want them to be wounded and confused. And so when I say clear reasons, I don't mean like complete exhaustive reasons. You know, you don't have to do the last 10% because, well, you're kind of weird or whatever. But you have to give them something, you know, that they can walk away and have clarity. Like, hey, you just have never been in our groups before. Or I just, you know, don't know you well. Maybe you can get into a group and apprentice and we can go from there. But you got to give them a clear reason why. It's a style thing. It's a personality thing. It could be whatever the thing is. You want to give them some level of clarity. That's tough. But if you're in the position to do that, that's why you're in the position to do that, is to have tough conversations. The second thing that you need to do is provide options for small group environment and a potential roadmap for involvement and future leadership. So if they can't lead, you need to give them a roadmap of how they can get involved. Maybe it's just being in a group for a while. Sometimes it's a no. It's not a no. It's a not now. And in those circumstances, you just need to help them figure out what they would need to do to lead in the future. And that might just be, hey, get in a group and work with a leader. And this can happen. But I would love to see that happen first. So being clear, giving them a roadmap will help you in these situations where you've had to say no. And again, the reason why we do all this is because at the end of the day, we're talking about people's lives. We really believe God uses these groups and these group leaders to minister to people, love to people, to do his work in people's lives. So it's important for us to have clear, consistent, and thorough processes along the way. Again, to help you maximize the good stories and minimize the tough stories.